Srirachitam kim hrittam amba saubhagam. Translation, Mother, you are the reservoir of all riches. Please inform me of the root cause of your tribulation by which you have been reduced to such a weak state. I think that the powerful influence of time, which conquers the most powerful, might have forcibly taken away all your fortune, which was adored even by the demigods. Here the earth is addressed as Vasundhara, a very common name for the earth, and it's translated as reservoir of all riches. Vasu means wealth. So the earth is filled with all types of wealth. Prabhupada mentions in the purport that, of course, the earth is created in such a way that it supplies all living entities, just like the Supreme Lord himself is said to be full, and even if he creates everything, he's still full. He in no way deteriorates. So on another level, we could say the whole universe and the planets and the earth are all constructed in such a way that they maintain themselves. And therefore, there's no necessity of some external force coming and having to supply anything. So within the laws that are operating on Earth, everything is nourished in its proper way. And so in that way, the Earth is full of wealth. But when the Supreme Lord comes, and then something very special happens to the earth. It becomes particularly blessed. We see when Krishna appeared on earth, it's described in the 10th canto that immediately when he took birth in the prison house of Kamsa, the earth began to transform, and suddenly the lotuses began blooming, and all the flowers which were out of season began to bloom. And suddenly the fires of the Brahmins, which had been extinguished, began to blaze up again. And the moon itself, which was a waning moon going towards the dark moon, suddenly turned into a full moon. And all the planets in the sky entered into auspicious constellations to celebrate the birth of Krishna. So when Krishna was present, he destroyed all of the disturbing factors, the demons, and he established peace on the earth and prosperity again. But it was also very special because of the presence of the Supreme Lord, such that the devatas all gave great respect to the earth planet. It was better than Swargaloka. It was better than Brahmaloka because it was the residence of the Supreme Lord. And therefore, all the wealth of the spiritual world, as well as all the wealth on earth, was supplied to the earth planet at that time. And so in this way, the presence of the earth gives a special quality of auspiciousness to the earth planet. And when he goes, of course, it disappears, that extra auspiciousness suddenly vanishes. But I also mentioned that the Lord makes arrangements for everything so that the jivas don't suffer. Nevertheless, we see that we have yugas. And one yuga after the other leads to gradual destruction. We have Satya Yuga, which is very good. We have Treta Yuga, which is a little bit polluted. We get Dwapara Yuga, half polluted, and we have Kali Yuga, three quarters polluted. And then towards the end of Kali Yuga, it gets down to all polluted. So we see that even though the earth is perfectly constructed, or the whole universe is perfectly constructed, nevertheless, we do get these cycles of destruction happening So on Bhartavarsha, we get this experience of yuga cycles. But on other planets also we get destruction, because we see that after every Manvantara period also there is, or even at the Manvantara period, there is a destruction, a flood, in which the there's a lot of disturbance. Then at the day of Brahma, there's a big flood, and all the planets, even Svargaloka, get inundated. And then we have, of course, the end of Brahma's life, which everything is destroyed. So we can ask, if the Lord is so perfect, why does he make an earth which is destructible? Why does he make a universe which is destructible? And the answer is, this is the plan of the Lord. He doesn't want to make a perfect material earth planet, or a perfect universe in the sense that it's eternally preserved or whatever. He makes out of material elements, he makes these planets, but they're all destructible. So this is not a fault of the Lord, it's a deliberate plan of the Supreme Lord. So we have in the third canto of Bhagavatam a whole description of time, down from the fractions of seconds up to seconds, and then we get minutes, and then we get hours, and then we get sections of the day, then we get days, then we get nights, and then we get weeks, and we get months, and we get years, and we get 100 years and 1,000 years. We have larger and larger expanses of time, all created by the Supreme Lord. Now these expanses of time, of course, are material. There's nothing like that in the spiritual world, because there's no past, present, future. So we don't measure time in the same way. But in the material world, we have all these little divisions and bigger divisions of time. And what does time measure? Creation and destruction. From the smallest entity to the largest entity, Lord Brahma. So everything in the material world is under the control of time. And who controls time? Time is controlled by the Supreme Lord, ultimately, and no one else. So this is one of the aspects of the Supreme Lord, which is very mysterious, but which affects everything in the material world. And it ultimately leads to destruction. So we have Krishna Bhagavad Gita saying, I am time the destroyer. So it's one aspect of Krishna, not the complete aspect, but he is the destroyer, he's also the creator. And then he's beyond creation and destruction also in the spiritual world. But this material world is made in this way, with constant creation and destruction. That is the plan of the Lord. So we can say, why does he make that plan like this? And the ultimate answer is that the world is constructed as it is for giving mercy to jivas. And we can say, well, how is it merciful that everybody has to suffer and die? And the answer to that is that the whole experience in the material world has a purpose of educating the jivas to understand that they're not the material body at all, and that they are Atma, which is indestructible. And if you realize that, then there is no suffering in the material world. Once you realize that you're the soul, you don't have to suffer in the material world. So because the jiva identifies with matter, then he suffers. When he doesn't identify with matter, he doesn't suffer. So therefore this idea of creation and destruction being cruel or whatever, it's not. It's just simply an arrangement by which the jiva can realize that he is not matter, that he is a soul, that he is spiritual. So the time and all of the divisions of time and the Manvantara periods and the days and nights of Brahma and the lifetimes of Brahma are all there to give a realization to the jiva that he should transcend the material world and give up attachment to it and understand he's something completely different. So that's the positive aspect of creating a destructible universe and destructible bodies in this material realm. We should not, therefore, criticize the Lord for this creation. It is, of course, a theological problem for many people and for many religions to answer the question of why do we suffer, why do we die, etc. And many people are not satisfied with the answer that religion gives. They can't explain how God is all merciful, and yet you see we have all the suffering in the material world. So this is the Bhagavata answer to that problem of suffering. Of course, what it means is that we do have to accept that you're not the body, that you're the soul. And we make a clear distinction between body and soul. So that's a first step in getting an answer. Secondly, that we go from body to body, material body, by our karma, by the activities we do. And we get more suffering if we do more sinful activities. And we get less sinful activities, or less suffering if we do less sinful activities. So we can accept those two concepts. The self is not the body. It's a spiritual entity which is eternal. Secondly, it goes from bodies to bodies because of acts committed by the jiva himself. Then we can solve the problem. So these are two basic ideas which are presented by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. And that solves that problem of why do we suffer in this material world? Is God responsible for it? So the answer is no, God is not responsible for it. We are responsible for our suffering because we create our karma. We create our bodies. We create our birth and death and our diseases and whatever we have in this world. It's not the Supreme Lord that does that. Certainly, he's the one that behind the bodies and the time and all this arrangement. But if we want to get less suffering, we can get less suffering by following Dharma. Of course, we can't completely solve the problem because we know that even Brahma has to die. But then if we really want to solve the problem, then we take the spiritual life. And we can either just get liberation and solve the problem that way as a jnani or yogi, or we can develop prema and enter into the spiritual world with Krishna. So this material world has the purpose of educating the jivas so that they can attain the highest bliss in the spiritual world. So therefore the material world and everything here is ultimately the mercy of the Supreme Lord. So that solves this question, the theological question, is God cruel and why does he make the material world, etc. Of course, on a more philosophical level, we have the idea of how can God create a material world at all, because it's made out of matter, and matter is temporary and changing and full of all bad qualities. Which is more or less the same question, but in a more philosophical bent. So this gives rise to all sorts of philosophies, even within those persons who accept the Vedas. And therefore we have different darshanas, different explanations of relationship of God or Brahman with the material world. And the most extreme of which is Shankara's Mayavad philosophy, where actually there is no suffering and there is no material world. It's all illusion. And only Brahman exists. So that solves the question. There is nothing else except Brahman. And what we call this achit world of matter doesn't exist. However, the Vaishnavas take a more practical view of this. And they say, no, material world does exist according to scripture. When Krishna describes the material elements and creation and destruction, it doesn't say it's illusion in the Bhagavad Gita. So, real. Similarly, Upanishads discuss the creation of the universe and the planets and the living entities, bodies, etc. So, and they never say it's illusion also. So therefore, we can't say it's illusion. So then we're stuck again with the problem, okay, why does the Lord create bodies and stuff which are matter and whatever like that? So Lord Chaitanya's solution to that is Shakti. The Lord does this through Shakti. So So he doesn't directly do things. He operates through his Bahiranga Shakti to cause material world. So he's not involved at all. Yeah. So we see the example of Mahavishnu lying down very peacefully, sleeping nicely, dreaming nicely. And then he glances, bloop, and suddenly creation takes place over there, somewhere else. He glances at distance, so he never touches Prakriti at all. Simply his consciousness, to say, start operating, and then Prakriti begins to manifest into Mahatattva, etc., and finally into universes. So the Lord doesn't contact matter at all. Simply by his willpower he can do that. And why he makes this achitta, unconscious world? That's coming from his Maya Shakti, his Achit Shakti. And that Shakti is related with him, but also distant from him. And through that Shakti, he operates and creates the material world. So in other words, if we have a potter, the potter makes a pot out of clay. And when he does so, he uses his hands. His hands get dirty. So then the potter gets contaminated by the clay when he creates the pot. So we can say, well, the Supreme Lord gets contaminated by matter because he has to create material world. But no, he's completely separate. He doesn't use his hands at all. He simply instigates it. And another way of looking at it is he glances and time factor causes the stimulation of material energy to transform. So when he glances, we talk of the time energy, kala, manifesting and causing the whole transformation of Prakriti into Mahatattva, etc. So that, then we get back to time here. This is this time factor, very, very powerful in the material world. So not only it causes changes from Satya Treta and Dwarpa Kali, it also causes whole creation of the material realm and its destruction as well, instigated by time. And behind the time is the will of the Supreme Lord. When he says, let it happen, it happens. Of course, we can still accuse the Lord, well, why does he have that desire to put the jivas in the material world and, you know, get them covered like that? So the answer is given that all the jivas are sleeping very nicely in Mahavishnu, but then the jivas get restless and they want to enjoy in the material world. So when that desire of the jivas and restlessness gets strong enough, then the Lord glances over Prakriti and he puts the jivas into matter. So it's the desire of the jiva. Because the jivas want to enjoy the material world, the Lord manifests the material world. So it goes back to the jiva again. Why is the creation there? Why does the Lord do it? Because the jiva likes it. The jiva wants it. So he gives it to him. But nevertheless, though he does that, the Lord has a subtle plan by which the jiva can get educated and get out of that situation. Okay. But it is up to the jiva. That's why it takes so long. The Lord can say, I have mercy on everybody, everybody get out. They can get out. They become nitya siddhas or sadhana siddhas immediately. But that doesn't happen. Okay. He lets the jiva work his way out. So he works through different species of life, from plant to animal to human being or devata or whatever. And then within the human species, different grades of consciousness also, from tamaguna to sattvaguna, etc. So in this way, there's a gradual evolution of consciousness of the jiva, hopefully, by progressing through the different bodies till he gets to the human species, and from human he goes from tamas to sattva, etc. And then finally to bhakti. Now, but it's very precarious, because the jiva has his own way he wants to do things. So therefore he doesn't always go according to the plan of the Lord. He goes his own way and the Lord lets him do it. So as a human being, then he does that. He gives that capacity to the human being. Okay, now now you can do whatever you want. You can do it. And if you use your intelligence, yes, then you progress. If you don't use your intelligence, you go downwards again. So ultimately responsibility goes back on the jiva and his choices, what he wants. So when the jiva does decide to take faith in the Lord and get rid of his ignorance, that sincere moment in which there's a little bit of inclination for the Lord is called faith or shraddha. And that is the qualification for performing bhakti. And then once that process starts, if the jiva avoids aparads, offenses, then he can progress very nicely out of the material world. So we may think, well, that's still so long, we have to take many births to get out of the material world. True. We see that even great devotees of the Lord may take a long time to get out, like Bharat. But compared to our existence here in other bodies in ignorance, it's nothing. Because from the beginning of Brahma's day, that's the 50 years now, we've been going from body to body already. And in this particular day of Brahma, we'll be going from body to body also, from Svayambhuva Manvantara all the way up until our present yuga cycle in Vaivasvata Manvantara. And before this Brahma, there was another Brahman, another Brahman, another Brahman, another Brahman, and we take bodies for life after lifetime of Brahma. So therefore that, if it takes you 5 lives or 10 lifetimes or 20 lifetimes, actually that's nothing compared to the whole time we're sitting in the material world, going from universe to universe, from Brahma's life to Brahma's life to Brahma's life. Nothing. And through this process, of course, the jiva gathers his strength, spiritual strength up, so that it becomes fully qualified, so that he becomes qualified to see the Lord and to interact with the Lord and display his full love of the Supreme Lord. Yeah, so that's the plan of the Lord, but it involves the free will of the jiva. And therefore, slow for many jivas. But once they get to the process of bhakti, because of the mercy of the Lord and his direct guidance, it becomes quicker. Yeah. So the bull is asking, well, ultimately it looks as if you're grieving because time has influenced everything and is taking everything away from you, all the prosperity, all of the, of course Krishna went, one thing, and secondly everything else is gone now. Even it's not even an ordinary state, it's in a miserable state with lack of everything. And why? Because of the influence of time. So that is also a reason. That means because of Kali Yuga. We cannot prevent Kali Yuga from starting. It will start. It has started, and it started when it was supposed to start, after the disappearance of Krishna, and no one could prevent it. Even Parikshit cannot prevent it. Okay? So that's the force of time, which is, I say, the will of the Supreme Lord. The Varsha goes through these transformations down to destruction, Satyatreta, Dwarpa Kali, one after the other. And we can't interfere with that cycle. So in terms of external problems, yes, we have to simply accept that it's going to happen. There must be a Kali Yuga, and we cannot escape that. However, the Lord is not completely unintelligent. He has also mercy even in Kali Yuga, so therefore he makes other arrangements. Yes, the circumstances are going to be very bad, but then to counter that, the spiritual process is very good. Nam Sankirtan is the good thing. Everything else is bad, but that's good. So this balances out the problem. So we don't have Sankirtan and Satyatreta Dwarpa, but we have it in Kali Yuga, and this is the most powerful process. So that compensates for all of the bad qualities of Kali Yuga that we do have. So this way we see the clever arrangement of the Lord for everything. Yeah. So of course we also have an extra advantage in our particular Kali Yuga, And that's because Krishna appeared at the end of Dwarpa Yuga. Vedavyas wrote the Bhagavatam. Sukadev made it even sweeter by presenting it to us. So we have the opportunity to realize Krishna in his sweetest form in our Kali Yuga. So that makes it even better than any other yuga cycle, because we get the opportunity to realize Krishna. And of course we have Nam Sankirtan, the process by which we can realize Krishna. Yeah, so that way, even all the fortune's gone away, that's called the Sobhaga, is all disappeared. It's come back, spiritually speaking, in what Lord Chaitanya has given. Okay.
Somehow you mentioned that at the end of Lord Brahma's day, I've read that the lower planets inundated, but you mentioned right up as well.
Yeah. The three worlds get inundated, so that goes up to Svargaloka, and there it stops. And so, Mahajana Tapa Satya, they remain.
So the jivas up to that point, they go back into Mahavishnu?
Well, yeah, everybody goes, even Brahma goes back into, not Garbhadakshay Vishnu. Yeah, and they sleep for a little while in the night time, and then they come out, and Brahma puts them back in, he creates all the, rearranges the planets again, and the upper ones are still there, but the lower ones are messed up, and then he puts all the jivas back at their places again.
So it's also when some people would say that, the suffering and the disturbance that jivas go through, we don't, suffering that we've had in our previous lives, etc., we don't really remember that. So what's the lesson we're meant to learn? Like, if we perform some sort of simple reaction in previous lives, we're suffering for it, but how does that benefit? Like in this life.
Yeah, how if we don't remember why we did it, how we could repent for it? Because how would we remember it? And of course, some rare cases, people do remember something, but that's a rare thing. And the reason why we can't remember is because we have so many things we've done. If we remember everything we've done, then we would just be going crazy in this lifetime. We couldn't live this lifetime at all. Just as in this lifetime, people also, they may block out experiences. So, and some people may block out many experiences, and therefore they develop like split personalities just to not deal with certain aspects of life, just like this. So, and of course we have traumatic experiences in childhood, and the child forgets it completely because he can't deal with it. In that way, the whole of all the lifetimes kind of blocked out, because it's going to disturb us so much in this lifetime we can't even do anything. So in this lifetime we have a limited set of challenges, and all these other things are put in the background. And then we got a limited set of challenges, that's the karmas of this lifetime to deal with and try to work around them and solve them, etc. Nevertheless, we can say that the influence is still there on everybody. The likes and dislikes, the fears and the anger and whatever, they still come through. But they are, whatever is coming through is an opportunity for us to advance. We have to deal with our problems that we have now and solve those problems in advance. So we get, a limited amount of that information filtering through, and we deal with that information that we got and try to solve that problem, and that's that way we progress.
No, there's one devotee who as long as he can remember, when he walks into water, once the water gets over his knees, he starts panicking. He's always had that sort of, and he went to a clairvoyant out of frustration, he just wanted to go for a swim, and the clairvoyant, he was told that in his previous life he died by drowning. The point you mentioned about so many things we're suffering, if we remember it all, we've got the crazy one, the Sunday feast, he mentioned that he underwent past life regression and hypnotism.
Yeah.
And he remembered leaving his body in his previous life, and his whole family was around him. And he said there was so much pain he experienced again, it took him 3 years to get over it in this lifetime. If you're remembering all the suffering,
is there some that get out immediately? Well, if we're doing bhakti and then we get to a certain stage, then we get out. Now, if we almost get out, but we're not quite there, then we may go back into Mahavishnu, come out, and then we just complete that in a one lifetime or whatever, and we go out. So according to our advancement, then we get born again, and then, you know. Well, we don't talk about a beginning because we don't talk when Mahavishnu first sat down, lay down on the ocean. He was just there, and there's a continual creation, destruction of the universes. And therefore, when we come out, we already have a previous universe with previous karma. And before that was a previous universe with previous karma. So we call that anadi karma.
There's always something.
Yeah, we can't trace out what was the first karma. It's anadi. Before that was another one, another one, another one. So generally we have it's described, we have the two worlds. So we have the worlds where the jivas, the nitya siddha jivas, are there, and those who have gone through the material world and got out, they're called the sadhana siddha jivas, and they're all there with the Supreme Lord. And those jivas are very special because they have part of the internal shakti of the Lord. Bhakti itself is the chit shakti, or internal shakti of the Lord. So they get a portion of that it's part of the jiva, becomes part of the jiva. And therefore, they're always with the Lord and they never separate from Him. They're all closely integrated with the Supreme Lord and they never leave Him at any time. The jivas in the material world don't have that shakti. But we can get that, or it can manifest in us through the process of bhakti. And once we get it, then we go there. So it's like kind of a magnetism. Once you got that special chit shakti, then you're just there with the Lord, and then you stay there. You're just like the planets move around the sun. So like that, the jivas are have Krishna in the center there with that special attraction, like a magnetic force or whatever, and they revolve around Krishna.
In relation to that, because all the jivas are marginal.
Yeah.
So, at what point that marginal energy, some of them become nitya siddhas and all become nitya?
Eternal. There's no point at which suddenly they became nitya siddhas, because nitya siddhas mean they're eternally like that.
No point. But then, why some become nitya siddhas and all become nitya?
Why they are, not because they become, they are just are. So why they are like that is because
they are manifested already as nitya siddhas and nitya siddhas.
Yeah, of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives the analogy of like this. So there's a line called the tattashta line. Here's the spiritual world, here's the material world. The jivas are tattashta, so they're stuck in the center. And at the theoretical point of creation, so to speak, of everything, which doesn't take place, some choose it, some choose that. But there's no real beginning as such, so we can just say our choice is without beginning here in the material world. Yeah? So we say why some choose this, or why some choose that way.
Do they have different constitutions?
Jivas are individuals. So therefore there's variety. And the second tattashta means liable to fall into ignorance. So those who do become liable to fall into ignorance, those are the jivas in the material world. Those that don't are in the spiritual world. The nityasiddhas.
So there's two types of jivas. One has a tendency to become attracted by the illusion or material world, and the other ones have no tendency.
They're tattashta, so they're still tattashta. So that means they do have that weakness, but they've chosen the Lord eternally, and they get the chit shakti with them, so that kind of seals up their relationship. The other ones, we don't want that. We want to be separate, so they're here in the material world, but even those ones can attain that position also by the mercy of the Lord. Yeah, the choice, yeah. And therefore they get covered up with ignorance, and they go take birth and death and get material bodies, etc. But because they are very similar, they can also choose not to. And when they do that through the choice of bhakti, then they develop the chit shakti, and then they go to the spiritual world, and then they're eternally there. So then they become exactly like the nitya siddhas.
Regarding illusion,
yeah.
We think everything is real.
Yeah.
But yet at the same time we always talk about Maya. So Maya is
So what is it? Is it illusory or not illusory? We can say that the Maya Shakti is real, and material world is real with the material elements and the planets and the bodies, they're real. But how we think of it is not quite what it actually is. In other words, we attribute all sorts of wonderful qualities to certain things and we become attracted to it and we think that's going to make me happy. So that's all the Maya part of it. Okay? And the jiva becomes attracted to these things thinking he's going to get happy. So that's the Maya. If we see the things as they are, then there's no more attraction for the material world. But if we have this strange illusion that I'm going to be happy with these things, then that's how Maya acts on us. Anything else? Okay. Hare Krishna. Mm-hmm.